Jason, it's Packers Week Part 2. We'll break all that down and some off-the-field stuff coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears have everything they want in front of them, starting with a primetime game Saturday night against the hated Packers at Soldier Field. The winner leads the NFC North for another week. The loser falls down to number 7. Micah Parsons won't be there, but neither will Roma Dunze or Luther Burden. It should be just wonderful theater. I'm curious what your vibes are from the Packers side, which is where you spent Wednesday, inside the locker room in Green Bay.
I think with the Packers, it's you're hearing them talk seriously about the Bears and the rivalry and mean it for the first time in a long time. I think for a while you've heard them saying what they need to say, kind of following the same old script about the Bears rivalry. But really, the Vikings and the Lions especially, have been much more of a problem for them, much more of an impediment to where they want to go. Now it's the Bears. Finally, this is back where it was in 2018 for sure. Maybe even 2019 at the beginning when they opened the season against each other. Mm-hmm. This is back to where I think everybody on both sides wants it to be. This is the premier rivalry in the division this year. And I love that they play each other so close, so soon after the first meeting. I think that's perfect. And I also like the fact that they are on a track for each other in the playoffs that is going to be hard to change. It's really, the more you go through all the different scenarios, the more it comes up. Bears-Green Bay in the wild card round is highly likely.
And the winner of the game on Saturday is in pole position to at least get to host that game, right?
Yeah, I think that's really what's at stake, and those are high stakes. If this is a real rivalry, then it's going to be very, very hard to win road games in the rivalry. And that has not been the case. Green Bay has had plenty of fun at Soldier Field over the years, the recent years. But I think that it's going to be a really tough one for the Packers on Saturday. And if whoever gets a hold of that and gets home field in a potential matchup between the two, that's huge.
In the last 15 years and 2.5 months or so, the Bears have won one game at home against the Packers, and that is in 2018, where, Jason, I love to tell the story, they clinched the NFC North by beating the Packers, and they clinched the win by Eddie Jackson intercepting a pass in the end zone, and Eddie Jackson hurt himself returning the ball and never played again that season. This is really going to be super interesting on a lot of fronts. And you mentioned, the schedule. When the schedule came out this year, my big concern was by the time the two teams played each other, the Bears would be so out of it that it wouldn't matter. And that is very much not the case this year. And, they're playing each other 2 weeks apart. But, Jason, the Packers are going to have to do it without Micah Parsons. And the Bears' offense is going to look very different, too. And their defense might look different if Tremaine Edmonds comes off of IR on Friday afternoon. So there's going to be a lot similar, but enough different, I think, to be interesting as well.
Yeah, if you compare, for example, we're going to see them play the Lions in week 2 and then the Lions in week 18. You're looking at that and saying, well, this is a total clean slate on both sides. Neither of these teams is what they were in week 2. The Bears for the better and the Lions for the worse, probably. Not by a ton, but by some. This is so fresh in your mind. And I have a couple notes for you here, Patrick. This is the previous game, the Lambeau Field game. That was the latest in a season that the Bears and Packers had their first meeting since 1998. So the deepest into a season they each went without seeing each other since 1998, almost 30 years ago. This is also the first time since 1998 that they are playing each other twice in a 3-week span. And then those are interesting. This is kind of minutia that I think you will like. It is the first Saturday game. It is the second Saturday game ever between the two teams and the first since 1964.
Wow. I like the minutia. Do you like Saturday games? Have you covered a lot of them?
I feel like I've been to a Dolphins Jets game in New York on a Saturday night. But man, I don't think the Bears have played a Saturday night game since I've been covering them. Not really. I like the Sunday games.
The for Bears fans wondering what to root for on Sunday, might I draw your attention, Jason, to the Lions game at home against the Steelers. If the Bears win on Saturday night, all they need is the Lions to lose, and the Bears clinch a playoff spot, correct?
Yeah, so you and I have talked about this off mic, but the stakes on Saturday are not enormous necessarily. The Bears go in as the 2 seed. The Packers go in as the 7 seed. They will both be in those spots no matter what happens Saturday. The winner will be the 2 and the loser will be the 7. So they're like railroaded in at those spots right now. The difference for the Bears is that if they did win and then got a Lions loss or tie, then they have clinched one of those 7 spots, which would be pretty big for them with 2 games left. Gives you a chance to, you at least have the option to say, okay, we're going to pull it back with some guys. It allows you to say, with Romo Dunze, for example, okay, we're definitely sitting him out these last 2 games. We don't need to claw and scrap for every inch against the 49ers and the Lions, because at least you have that safety net of you are in no matter what.
I can't think of a bigger swing in terms of style, though, than the LA Rams playing at SoFi Stadium in January and the LA Rams having to play at Soldier Field in January. I still think that even if they clinch a playoff spot, there's enough to play for in terms of home field advantage that the Bears would probably be well served to keep their foot on the gas, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but within reason. I mean, take the exact guy I just mentioned, Romo Dunze. Maybe you don't push it with him if a playoff spot is in the bag. I agree with you for sure, what you're saying about home field and seeding, and those are all really important things, but I would say more important is Romo Dunze on the field for that first playoff game. So if you know you've got that bare minimum of they are in for sure, it gives you the option to consider something like, okay, Rome just rests the next 2 weeks, which, hey, Rome might be done for the season anyway. We don't know.
And what's interesting is I don't think putting him on IR really would do anything at this point. It would free up a roster spot, but you know, they can't backdate it 2 weeks either. So if you put him on IR, then you can only backdate it to Sunday, and then he'd be out for the rest of the regular season. I don't know. Don't you get the impression that they're just going to, go through their plan with him while keeping him on the active roster?
Well, for the reasons you just said, they can. But I mean, I make no assumptions about what's going on with that, especially, man, with this team. The last 2 games, they had a player scratched shortly before kickoff, Kyler Gordon against the Packers, and Rome thought he was going to play. Everybody thought Rome was going to play Sunday against the Browns, and then he aggravated the injury during warmups, and he's ruled out for Sunday, or Saturday, I should say, for sure. How big of a and Luther Burden as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So where are you? How are you sizing up what they're bringing into the game offensively when you're missing what, your number 1 and number 3 wide receiver?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big game for Colston Loveland. I think you'll probably see a lot of 2 tight end stuff in there. In terms of wide receivers, you're now looking at DJ Moore, Alamide Zaccheaus, and Devin Duvernay. That's not a great group. Jahdae Walker is on the 53-man roster. I imagine he's next man up. And then you've got J.P. Richardson and Maurice Alexander. I would guess one of the 2 comes up from the practice squad on Friday. I think this is just going to be another week in which Ben Johnson has got to be creative in his personnel usage. I'll be keeping an eye on DeAndre Swift. He's been limited the last 2 days with a groin injury that's bothered him all year. We went to talk to him today and he kind of waved us off. That's usually not a good sign, given that this is a guy who's, will tell you when he thinks he's going to play.
Yeah, Swift says if he's going to play.
Yeah, so, they may be a little hamstrung there. I was reading something today, Jason. I think it's Sports Info Solutions has the Bears with the most games lost to injury all year. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. Well, I guess Kyler Gordon's got a lot of them.
Yeah. But what's interesting to me is that, you know,
that doesn't sound, it doesn't seem like it's been a season of injuries for them.
Yeah, I mean, you would say that, but then when you look at, I was doing this the other day, when you look at their defense, Jaquan Brisker hasn't missed a game. Kevin Byard hasn't missed a game. Is that the list? Is Shawnee missed a game? Like, it's, you know, it seems like every week there are two guys down, and it's what prompted Dennis Allen to give me a quote that I really liked the other day, Jason, where he said that putting together a game plan dealing with all these injured guys is like looking in the fridge and deciding what you're going to make for dinner. And of course I had to ask him, Jason, so do you cook?
Yeah, of course.
He said, and he gave the most dad answer of all time. He said, I grill. And yeah, so he's got another challenge this week, but getting Edmonds back would be a huge deal. And Ben Johnson even talked on Thursday about, boy, it'd be great to get him back. And I think Ben has been very careful as to how enthusiastic he is about guys coming off injury. But he talked about the impact that Tremaine could make, not only in pass coverage against Josh Jacobs, presuming he plays, but also just his sheer size. He almost doesn't have to move great if he's not quite ready. You know, that height just creates very different windows. And Jordan Love didn't have to deal with that height 2 weeks ago when, you know, he, you know, beat the Bears on some deep stuff. That was really the difference in the game.
Yeah. Tremaine Edmonds is a unique body type and skill set out there. He is not always, I don't think he's been as good as Roquan Smith was for them or has been since, which was kind of how they spent that money. Well, I guess, and TJ Edwards. I think I'd still go back and want Roquan Smith over the two of them, but I don't know if everybody feels that way. But on the other side of it, Jordan Love, I think we're past the point where Jordan Love is hoping for help with the opposing defense. I don't think it really matters to him who's out there and who's not. I think it is kind of taken for granted in Green Bay, but not around the rest of the league, that Jordan Love is a threat on his own. Jordan Love has reached the point where if you made a list, I have to think he's a top 10 quarterback on most people's list. He is a problem in and of himself.
Yeah, and you know, we can sit here and detail all the injuries the Bears have had, but Jordan Love started the season without Christian Watson, lost Tucker Kraft, who was the best tight end going when he got hurt, spent most of the season without Jaden Reed. Like, he's been hit by this stuff too, and that hasn't really slowed him down any. And yeah, I think Jordan Love is, I think he's here to stay. And I'm not sure I believe that even at the end of last season. He's been really, really good.
He's the best quarterback in the NFC North right now.
Yeah, today, I think that's probably year, true.
He's the best. I mean, he's having the best season of any of the NFC North quarterbacks.
Yeah, and I guess I would agree with that. I think that the Jared Goff, boy, I mean, I think that I'm guilty of this. I dismiss Jared Goff too quickly sometimes, but I think you're right that the Jordan Love is the best. Jason, do we want to do our picks now and then move on to the off the field foolishness, or do we want to save the picks to the end to keep the people sticking around?
No, let's do the picks now. Off the field, you're talking about the field that they will play on off the field, right?
I mean, maybe in theory at some point. Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's do the picks.
Okay, so we are out of the five Sun Times prognosticators, four of us, and I mean us because I include myself, have picked the Bears in this game, which is just a very different tone than we're used to having for these games. I've got them 27-21. Scoop Jackson's got them 30-22. Steve Greenberg, 27-24. And Mark Potash, who's been better at this than all of us, has got him 31-29. Jason Leisure, your score is Packers 24, Bears 22. Other than bringing some balance to our predictions, what's your thought process?
Well, what was the widest margin there?
I think Scoop by 8.
Okay, so everyone's saying one score game, including me, the other direction. I think that that was probably the best possible game for the Packers 2 weeks ago, was to get that kind of scare from Caleb Williams and the Bears and survive it. I think there is absolutely zero overlooking the Bears or assume kind of underrating the Bears on that part. I think they will come in and play their absolute best game. And they have been in games like this. Caleb Williams and the Bears, and most of them, a lot of them have not.
I think that Caleb getting off to a fast start may tell the tale of the whole thing. You know, if they're up a quick 7-0 or 7-3 or 10-0 or 10-3, Soldier Field's going to be a pretty crazy place to play. And I just, that first quarter, I would be surprised if the first quarter, if as Caleb goes in the first quarter, isn't the way Caleb goes the whole game.
Well, I mean,
that's not what happened in the first Packers game. Caleb in the second half was a completely different person. But
it's not what happened. It's happened in a lot of games for him this season. It's one of the steps the Bears need him to take is to be the same guy from the beginning to the end, to be a steady play-to-play quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Instead of
some of what he's done has been, you know, struggle early and then really turn it on late, or hit this lull kind of in the middle of the game. They need a little bit more dependable and consistent play-to-play quarterback play from him. And one of the things, Patrick, that I got to see from Caleb Williams, and it's getting late to have not seen this yet, is a great quarterbacking game in the NFL, there are so many boring pieces to it. Like these great throws that he makes, like to DJ Moore for the touchdown, or Olamide Zaccheaus a couple weeks ago against the Packers. These off rhythm, out of rhythm, kind of off balanced, amazing throws he makes that so few guys, even at his level, even starting quarterbacks in the NFL, can make. Those are great, but that isn't how you build the 300-yard, 100-passer rating game. So much of that is built by 7-yard slants. It is just dink and dunk, hit the guy underneath, hit the guy in the flats, hit the screen pass where you lead the running back into yards, and then you throw 3 to 5 of those big plays on top of it. You start doing that every week, you're one of the best quarterbacks in the league. That's how it's done. That's how Mahomes does it. That's how all the best guys do it. It is not just big play after big play after big play. It is a mastery of the basics. And then you add special on top of that. And I have not seen Caleb consistently show mastery of the basics. His career will take off like a rocket once he does that. But we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, he's like a basketball player who scores 30 points and misses 7 free throws or something. And you sit there and go, no. You've got the hard part down. Just do the easy part. You have a chance. We were talking today or the other day to Jalen Johnson, Bears corner, and he was telling us, you know, how his body is kind of still working his way back. And he said, there's no pressure on us because nobody expected us to be here. And I asked him what he meant by that. And he said, well, did you think we'd have 10 wins? And I said, no, I did not. Do you think that there is any element of the Bears playing with house money that will be reflected in their intensity or lack of nerves or whatever?
I don't think there should be any kind of attitude like that of, well, we have nothing to lose, there's no pressure on us. I just don't think that's right. You have put yourself in the position where you have the privilege of there being pressure on you. You've earned it.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I mean, think of the pressure that's on the Chiefs going into every year. That's because they've earned that with their play, with their reputation. I think that's a good thing for the Bears to have that pressure. But I will say there is a little bit of, it's not exactly that attitude, but there is this extra aggressiveness that comes with Ben Johnson as the head coach. I mean, he kept, now it's one thing to say this, it would have been another thing to actually be presented with the decision and actually do it. But he kept saying he was going to go for 2 if they scored the touchdown against Green Bay at Lambeau Field, that they were going to go for the win and not risk going to overtime. I think that that attitude, going for it on fourth downs, and that mindset of wanting to just go and win the game on the two-point conversion if they'd gotten the opportunity, I think that that ripples throughout the locker room and the organization.
Cole Kmet said, though, that in retrospect, maybe they got a little too hyped 2 weeks ago before going to Lambeau, and that you could kind of feel that in the first half, and that it took going into halftime and sitting down and taking a deep breath to realize that, hey, man, this is just a football game. This isn't anything bigger than that. So we'll see. You know, one of the challenges when you hire a first-time head coach is, watching him learn in real time how to, balance, excitement versus calm, and how he gets his team ready. I think Ben's done a wonderful job this season doing that, but maybe that's a lesson learned for the second Packer game.
Yeah, possibly. And Ben Johnson, throughout the season, man, Ben Johnson went into the season saying, I can't remember if he said this in a Sun Times interview or at the podium, but saying that he was going to make plenty of mistakes, that he knew who he was. He knew he was a first-time head coach, and he was going to mess some things up. Let's see the list. Like, where's the list of things he has messed up this year? He has seemed, a halftime interview with CBS in week 4? I mean, he has seemed on top of everything. He has seemed to know exactly how to talk to the team, exactly how to make adjustments personnel-wise, scheme-wise. I think that he will have the right message and have the right tone going into this game. He has really impressed me with his ability to adjust and adapt.
Real quick, 3 minutes or less. The Gary, Indiana Bears, what do you think?
I mean, that's not serious, is it? I don't think that anybody looks at that as a serious threat.
Yeah, because what people who aren't looking for leverage usually say out loud is, this isn't a leverage play, right?
It's scary to, it's kind of scary that Kevin Warren pulled the pin on that. And if you haven't followed along, the Bears put out a statement Wednesday saying that they are not committed to Arlington Heights anymore, which, again, that never sounds that serious when you consider that they own the land. And that is the only one of these possible places that that's true of. They do not own the land to build a stadium anywhere else. They own a prime piece of property in Arlington Heights, Illinois, to build that stadium. But they're not committed there, and they're looking everywhere. And here's where he really pulled the pin on a grenade, including Northwest Indiana, which is obviously very intentional, because that's the only place he can mention that sends any kind of message to Springfield. But that, and then the Pritzker administration's response to it, which I forget exactly what it was, but it was dismissive and negative of it.
Mocking. I think it was mocking of him. Yes, right.
That's the first time, and there's been a long time. This saga is 4.5 years deep, Pat. This started in May of 2021 when Matt Nagy was still coaching the team. This talk about, or these moves, this process of getting a new stadium. This is the first time, a week before Christmas 2025, that it has turned nasty. That is a step up in the rhetoric right there.
Yeah, I think it's a step up. Remember, though, when they had the big press conference on the lakefront the day before the draft last year, what was it? Pritzker waited, 45 seconds until after it ended to say, this isn't going to work. It had probably been more respectful in the past, but I think both sides have been pretty clear about their intentions, at least publicly.
They're not going to do what Kevin Warren has been saying for at least a year and a half that they're going to do, which is break ground by the end of 2025.
Oh, come on, Jason. There's like 13 days left. You don't know that.
What's been done here? What's been done here is they bought a property and they demolished the grandstand at the old racetrack. That's it since 2021. That's the only movement. Am I missing anything?
A cynic would say that all they've done is destroy horse racing in Chicago. That's been it. I mean, they've paid a lot of lobbyists and a lot of architects and a lot of public relations firms a lot of money to try and get some momentum here. The timing of this is what strikes me more than anything. You know, if you'll think back to, like I just mentioned, the press conference they had on the lakefront the day before the draft, it was very clearly trying to capitalize on the momentum of the Bears drafting Caleb Williams. And it very clearly was trying to get the artist renderings into the hands of ESPN the next night so they could do a commercial for a new stadium while they waited for Caleb to put his Bears hat on.
Exactly.
You think back to week one of this year, 4.5 hours before kickoff of Ben Johnson's first game, Kevin Warren sends a email to season ticket holders saying that Arlington Heights is the only place for them, which was not news. It was something that they had broadcast, you know, and that I believe half their season ticket base was within 25 miles of Arlington Heights, which is funny now when you think of how far they're looking to move the team. I guess, in your opinion, Kevin doing this during the week of the biggest game the Bears have had in at least 7 years, does that cross some sort of line? Or is it just well within his tendencies that we've learned over the years?
It sounds like a news dump to me. It sounds like, well, let's get this in while everyone's focused on something else, while the team's winning and the game of the season is a few days away.
The Bears fans that I know seem to be more annoyed by this than previous stadium updates. Have you experienced the same thing?
I think everybody's just annoyed by the lack of progress on it, Patrick. I mean,
right.
There was at least the perception of some movement and progress when they had settled on a state. They're taking a step backward by backing off of Arlington Heights. And it's not the first time. I mean, there's been a lot of lateral movement here. Not only do we sit here and say, well, what's actually been done? What forward steps have there been? I mean, I guess one of them was saying they were going to build on Arlington Heights. Then they walked that back. Then at least a step forward and saying, it's the lakefront. Here's the plan. Here's what we're doing. It's going to be on the south lot at Soldier Field. And another step backward and a step forward again saying, hey, it's Arlington Heights. We're back. This is where we own property. All green lights on Arlington Heights. A step back now. I mean, think how little progress has been made on the stadium when I tell you that 4.5 years in, they don't know where it's going to be. They don't know what town it's going to be in. And for those of you that don't cover the NFL for a living and maybe don't travel around and see all these places, out of 30 NFL stadiums, right? That's the right number? The LA teams share and the New York teams share, so there's 30. Out of 30, this one probably ranks as a facility, setting aside the historical value of it, this ranks as a facility in the bottom three. It's in that bottom category with Washington. And is there another one that's kind of in that ballpark of pretty bad? But Washington's getting a new one.
Yeah.
Jacksonville.
Well,
I don't know if Jacksonville's getting a new one or not. But yeah. Okay. Washington is. And I mean, Washington's probably going to have theirs before the Bears do.
Yeah. At least the Bears one's on a good piece of land. Washington's out in the middle of nowhere, but now they're going to move to the old RFK site, and that should have Soldier Field beat in that regard. I would love to know whether the McCaskies, namely George, would rather stay at Soldier Field in its current condition or have to schlep to Indiana to watch a football game. I think that's a really interesting question.
Do you wonder or do you know? Because
I don't know, but I do wonder.
I have a guess. I don't think they're. I don't think they're the least bit serious about a move out of state.
And just real quick with Kevin Warren, and then we'll get out. I mean, Kevin Warren's a guy who has said, you know, there's no other place in the world I'd rather build the stadium than downtown Chicago. Then he has said there's no place in the world we'd rather build a stadium than Arlington Heights. Then he says in his letter yesterday that while there's no question that Arlington Heights is the only choice within Cook County, they're going to look everywhere else. Bears fans should probably, if they don't know by now, probably should not live and die with the declarations he makes in trying to get these things done.
No, and I don't know that I would even keep following this story if I was a fan or just someone who had an interest in this from the outside, because it's not going anywhere. It's just dragged out. so little has happened in 4.5 years. Four and a half years is enough time to have it done.
Yeah.
4.5 years is enough time to buy the property, make a plan, and have it built and open. And just nothing has happened. I mean, Patrick, like, where would you put the over-under at this stage, backing off Arlington Heights again? And by the way, doing so in part because they are getting just no support, no interest in doing this from the state government.
By support, we mean money, by the way.
Right.
Yes.
Where would you put the over-under on how many years from now that a Bears new stadium would open, considering that it takes 3 to build, I think?
2031, maybe. I think that's the number. Let's put it this way. I was telling somebody today that Ben Johnson could be the greatest coach since Mike Ditka and still not be coaching the Bears by the time they play their first game.
He might retire by the time they open a new stadium.
Yeah, it's just, it's something. Yeah, you kind of just want to say, hey, go figure it out and let us know when you're done.
And go watch anywhere else. Go to any other stadium. Go to any of the newer stadiums like Minnesota, Atlanta. SoFi is kind of on its own level because of how much money they spent on it. But if they all blow away Soldier Field, even if you want to say, hey, this is an old building, kind of like Wrigley Field, where it's got very narrow concourses, it's not super functional, parking's hard, all that, set all that aside. People in 2025 are, especially with how good TV is, I mean, you got to give them a reason to go to these games. And part of the reason is the elevated experience you get in all these other places, the lounges, the comfort of it being indoors if you're in Minnesota or Detroit. I think, is Cleveland going indoors too when they build a new one?
I don't know, but they're moving to the suburbs too.
I mean, think about this last game, Bears-Browns, Sunday at noon, 8 degrees. I mean, that stadium was not packed, but they would have had no problem. They would have had no problem filling it up and at whatever price they wanted to if it was indoors. And we went through that a few years ago when they played a freezing game against, I want to say, the Bills, and the ticket prices plunged and it wasn't really full.
I think it's important to note that the ticket price plunged on the secondary market. That the Bears had sold those tickets and had their money, and it didn't matter what stuff.
Yeah, but that's reflective of the interest in attending a game in 8 degrees against the Browns. And that flips completely when, no matter what time of year and what opponent and how bad the Bears might be at that time, which has been a problem for them the last several years, you're offering a world-class, state-of-the-art experience for 3.5 hours because your stadium is so nice.
Oh my God, maybe Kevin Warren should use you. Jesus. You're all in on the necessity of a stadium. I don't know. I'd argue to you that Bears fans, more than most when we go around the league, don't seem to mind the elements, don't seem to mind the bad experience. And as bad as they have been pretty consistently since I've been here, they sell out 95% of the time. Like, I don't know what the motivation is. I know what the motivation is. It's to double the worth of the franchise. But I think presenting it as, unless we get a dome, nobody's going to show up, I think that's a little different.
Well, that's a very, what is that called in debate where you restate my point in some ludicrous way that isn't what I said? What is that called?
You know, there will be a Super Bowl here, Jason. Everybody get excited about a Super Bowl that you won't go to because it's $8,000 a ticket. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think you could forgive both of us if we're cynical about this whole process.
It's exasperating. It's just, Pat, yeah. It's just like the head coaching failures before this one and the quarterback failures before this one. You just sit there and you look across the whole rest of the country and you're like, Why is it so easy everywhere else? Why can everywhere else figure out how to get a stadium?
Right. And well, and I'll take you one further and then we'll get out of here in a minute or two. Northwestern, the stepchild of the Big Ten, building the most expensive college football stadium ever. DePaul basketball, which hasn't been relevant since you were what, 3? Worked with the city to build a new arena. The the soccer team, I believe, is building an arena or building a stadium, correct? This stuff does get done, and it gets done when the in Northwestern's case, you have a part owner of the Bears and Pat Ryan writing a big fat check, and it gets done when you're DePaul and you work with the city and the convention center to get something done. The Bears have got to find their formula, and the fact that they haven't found a formula to get it done in, you know, a span of two different presidents and 4.5 different years is pretty maddening. We'll leave it at that, Jason. The good news is there have been some seasons where this would be the most interesting thing that happens to the Bears in December. I don't think that this is going to be in the top 10 by the time we get done. We've got plenty of exciting football left to play, and you and I will be there for all of it. Until then, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a paper. He's Jason. I'm Pat. We will come at you live from super, super late Saturday night at Soldier Field. And until then, well, I guess we'll talk to you then.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. There are many people who are with me when I'm listening to WBZ. My children in the car, but also my students in the classroom. We have listened to reports. And so I think that affects not just what I'm getting out of it, but also I think to see what we each take from it.